Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 41 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
Hey, so today we have kind of an interesting, divergence from our usual thing, in which we don't just have one topic, we have several topics.
Yeah, we're gonna take some listener questions. We often ask for them, and you guys email us, and you post on Facebook. And I think what we realized, Megan, is some of the awesome questions we get might not warrant, we don't have enough to say about it for a full episode, or we just aren't going to get to it for a while. So we decided to answer a few listener questions today in a mixed bag.
Yeah, and I've not taken very much time to look at these questions, so my answers will not be prepared.
Let's be honest. When you guys listen to us, it is like you're sitting on the park bench with us, watching our kids roll around in the dirt, and we're just off the cuff most of the time.
Sarah usually throws together like a little organized document, and about 5 minutes before the show, I might take a look at it. And then by the time we get on, I've usually forgotten.
But I think maybe that's part of our appeal. We are not rehearsed. We are saying the first thing that comes to mind.
Exactly.
So real quick, before we get going and also do our regular weekly segment, I wanted to point people to our website to sign up for our email list if you haven't. I'm going to be starting to hopefully build that email list a little bit and also include some kind of special or exclusive things every once in a while that we can send to you, either an audio download or, an article or a list of great podcasts that we love. So we're kind of going to be brainstorming that, and I won't promise anything in the next few days. But if you get signed up for that email list, number one, you'll get an email every time a new episode publishes. So that's convenient. But number two, we're going to be kind of offering some maybe more listener exclusive stuff through that down the road. So you can do that at themomhour.com. It's right in our sidebar and at the end of every episode's show notes. Just sign up. We won't spam you. We won't even really email you that often. So we would love to see your name there as well.
Yeah, sounds great. I love email, by the way.
Yeah.
Email is one of my very favorite ways to communicate. I know that's not like really popular these days.
There's
this thing where we're all supposed to hate it and resent it, but I like it.
Well, good emails are good. I mean,
exactly.
We all like receiving good emails. And social media, as much as we love it, is not always reliable to reach out to you guys. So so many of you email us. And this way, if you're on our email list, we can always keep you guys informed.
Yeah.
So Megan, what is happening in your house this week?
Oh, is this our segment?
Our regular segment.
Well, I know you're planning on talking about a sport, and it's just kind of funny because you're talking about what in our town would be a summer sport.
it's summer here.
Yeah, and William actually had ski club this week and fell down and hit his head on something. It was like one of those, it was fine. He actually thought it was kind of cool because it was kind of a badge of honor that he totally wiped out. But it's just funny to me that, we had a snow day this week.
Wow. Oh, you did?
Yeah, we had a snow day.
So how does ski club work in, you don't have mountains really, do you?
Hills? No, but we have hills.
Okay.
And it's he and his buddy have been talking a big game and then, talking about how great they are. And then it turns out I overheard him saying, and this week we even got off the bunny hills. So they've been sort of portraying themselves as being, kind of these superstars, and I think they've been kind of just hanging out on the baby hill. I mean, we've got a ski hill. It's not huge, it's not going to be like what you see out in Utah or something.
An extracurricular. Is it like an
it's
after
like an after school club? Yeah, and a lot of the kids do it. They just get on the bus, middle school thing, get on the bus and go ski for a few hours after school. So there was that on Monday night, and then on Wednesday it was kind of funny because John and I ended up going to happy hour with some friends of ours. And then we got the call that school was off.
Oh.
So we were all so excited. It's just so funny. We were hanging out with this younger woman who doesn't have any kids and also isn't from this town. She has just moved here not too long ago. And watching us all, this cheer went up around the table. We're like, yeah, snow day. And she's looking at us like we're crazy. But we all love it because, most of my friends are either teachers or are self-employed.
Right.
And a lot of the businesses around here don't make you come in on a snow day. It's just that small town thing, right? So Like everyone kind of gets to sleep in a little bit the next day. So it ended up just kind of turning into a longer evening of fun. And it was just, it was pretty fun. We all went back to their house and hung out with the kids. And
is that your first snow day this year?
We had one other one.
Okay. Because last year was the year of like
2 years.
Two years in a row.
Wow. Well, we had 2 years in a row where there was just an insane number of snow days. Yes. Last year and the year before. So this year, this is only the second one. And the other one got called like at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is nice. But there's not the same excitement.
Right, you don't get the jubilee of the evening before.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how our week went.
Fun.
A little disorganized, but that's okay.
Always a little bit somewhere. Well, yeah, we are not in winter weather. I mentioned that on last week's podcast, and I'm still waiting for my hate mail for complaining about Southern California winter weather. But it is still really summery here, and Little League is underway. So, let's see. We've had a couple of practices. So Reed is 5.5 and he's in coach pitch Little League this year. So no more tee. They bring out the tee if they can't get a hit in the first few coach pitches, which is cute. So it's still, you know, everybody still gets to advance to first base. But I don't know. I kind of have a love hate with this. They're so dang cute in their little uniforms. It's very sweet. We have a really good team of families and we've become friends with everyone. That's really the only reason why I'm doing it. I don't have, you know, pro ball hopes for my 5-year-old. And Little League is very intense here. I think I've mentioned it before and you've talked about kind of football, high school football in your town is pretty big. Southern California produces a lot of baseball players and Little League, our town, is really into Little League. It doesn't get super serious until they're a little older, but I feel like it trickles down. It just feels like a very intense atmosphere. And that's not really my jam usually, but I'm just trying to look at it as we're having fun right now. We really like the people on our team. So the intense people can stay intense and I don't need to let it bug me. But one funny thing that I texted you about when we were at our opening day ceremonies, other than the fact that it's February, it was like February 20th and we were in 80 degree opening day weather. Was that I asked you via text, I said, Megan, are all the little leaguers in your town wearing their hats with the brims completely flat? Like they just came off the assembly line instead of the curved brim. And so you and I had sort of a lengthy discussion about this trend.
This is what we talk about.
This is so important.
Very important things that
important,
we talk about.
You know, cultural observations, Midwest versus West Coast. And I felt like all of a sudden, the little boys, half the dads, everyone has these flat brim hats. And I have to admit, I was a little like, get off my lawn, like old lady about it. Like it looked kind of like, I don't know, weird. But
well, to me, there's
this trend
to me,
is
there's
rampant
that,
in your hood. Let me know, people.
Well, but, I bet it's going to trickle in is what I was going to say. Like, so for us and here, I definitely have seen the random person with a flat brim hat. I always associate that kind of with like Vanilla Ice circa the Surreal Life show. Do you remember that show? It was on VH1.
No, but kind of,
he was on it with Tammy Faye Baker and they were like all putting this house together. It was kind of like the real world, but it was also like kind of washed up celebrities.
So this is like mid-90s maybe?
This was early 2000s.
Oh, okay.
I kind of associate the flat brimmed hat thing with that era and that sort of aesthetic, to use that word. So it's interesting to me that now it's kind of a preppy thing. That has not really taken a hold here yet. But you know what, Sarah, our Little League season doesn't start for another couple of months.
I know. So this we will report back, people, on whether the flat brim.
And I don't love it either. I have to say, I like to wear hats the way they, you know, just like a hat.
The way
you wear a hat, like just like a hat. I don't know. I don't like the super curvy. You know, remember the 90s, very, very curvy? That's out. Yeah. I don't want that to come back. That always made my head look weird.
Right.
I don't want the flat. I just want like normal. I just want a hat. A
I know. And these
hat.
The little tiny guys are so little. And then it looks, it does look a little like they're trying to be way too cool. And they're like 5. And then half the coaches and the dads, it was very, Brian and I were like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So anyway, if any of you have thoughts about flat brim hats in Little League, let me know.
And I was go ahead.
No, the other thing happening in my house is I'm really excited. So when this airs, I will have just had a piece go up at the Washington Post, which is my second time being published there. And I am like few and far between in my freelance articles these days. Like I put out very little, so I get pretty excited when I do. And I would love for listeners who, you know, haven't followed my writing or seen my articles to go check it out. I think we've talked a lot about siblings lately. And it's a piece I wrote about kind of addressing the bickering politicians as if they are our bickering children. So it's a little bit funny, but it's a little bit serious, because I just feel like there's a lot of adults yelling at each other on TV who are acting more childish than my bickering children. So it's kind of a fun piece. I'll link to it in the show notes, and I'm just excited to be published there. I really think they do a good job with their parenting pieces. You and I have both written for Washington Post. Their blog is called On Parenting. So yeah, that was totally a self plug.
Well, that's what this whole show is about.
Right. I can plug whatever.
It's basically just about our own self gratification and promotion. Kidding. It's not what it's about at all. Should we get into the questions then? Then we can try to use our own self interest to help other people
Help people. Okay. So should we do the first one?
Yeah, go for it.
Awesome. So this question came by email from Janet Moore. And this is a fun topic. She wants to know about room sharing. I'll just paraphrase. She has two daughters, ages 6 and almost 3, and a third baby on the way. She says they have enough space for everybody to have their own room, but she grew up in a family that had siblings share rooms, and she thinks it would be really fun for her girls, so she wants them to experience that with the baby coming. But her question is, she said, I'd love your input on logistics. You know, sleep is a priority, how to make room sharing work, you know, just, yeah, the logistics, especially when they're at that ages. So
what ages are they again?
They are 6 and almost 3, and the third baby is on the way. Okay. So, yeah, so let's talk room sharing. You and I have both done it, but you way more than me at different ages.
Well, it's so funny because I'm thinking about all the different ages and stages where my kids have shared rooms, and it's been so all over the place. And sometimes we'll do it for a while and then have to kind of separate them out again into different groups, especially if one doesn't sleep well. So like I've always, you know, if we had like a 2-year-old who didn't sleep well and then you've got him in with the 4-year-old or the 5-year-old, it never really seemed fair, especially because often the 4 or 5 or 6-year-old would have school or daycare or some preschool or something the next day. And didn't have the flexibility and maybe couldn't even get a nap. So it was a lot of that kind of balancing. I think you just don't know till you try, though. That's the thing. You don't know till you put a particular combination of kids together and see what happens, whether or not it's going to work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think sometimes we get shell-shocked from how difficult sleep is in the first couple years that I know I'm guilty of assuming that my kids will wake up at the drop of a pin, which is completely my own PTSD about having babies who didn't sleep very well. So like you said, you don't know until you try. And even a kid who hasn't been a phenomenal sleeper reaching age 2.5, 3 may just kind of be starting to be ready to sleep more consistently through the night or sleep more soundly. And, you know, I think sometimes it's our worry that they're going to wake up as opposed to the reality of whether they will. I have, of my two older kids, one is a lighter sleeper and Allegra will wake up at little sounds, but she goes right back to sleep. And then Reed will sleep through anything, smoke alarms, like anything. So I agree. I don't think you really know until you try. And of course we understand sleep being a priority, but maybe sometimes the kids are more ready for it than you think because you've never tried, I guess.
I've also used room sharing as a strategy for little kids who don't sleep well on their own because it's always – I've found they're comforted by having a sibling in the bedroom. And, you know, the whispering and stuff that goes on at night, sometimes you might have to kind of really babysit them for a little while, you know, to kind of really monitor that at bedtime to make sure it doesn't become a problem. But now my kids, you know, I mean, they're older now, but like even it didn't take that long for them to get in the habit of just getting in bed and going to sleep. It was just kind of setting up that expectation at the beginning and having that and then having that work out. As far as things like toys and stuff, that has really never been a problem for us. And I guess maybe it's because we've often kept the majority of toys out of the kids' bedrooms anyway. Yes. That's a big thing. My kids just don't have that much stuff. So there's not really like this fight over whose stuff is what, you know, or whose stuff is in whose space. I think especially with the age gap, maybe it's easier just to keep the smaller kids' stuff elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't get spread all over the place. And they have to be old enough to understand not to get into their siblings' things.
Right.
It's all, you know, I hate to use the phrase a teaching. It's a teachable moment. But
yeah.
It is a very teachable experience. I can learn a lot about,
I agree,
you know, about all those things while it's sharing.
I agree. I'm thinking about one thing that's actually easier, I think, and with the ages of Janet's kids, I think this could work, is that I think the bedtime routine, if you sync it up, if they're close enough in age, especially with adding the third baby, I know we had really like golden months and years of room sharing where we put the oldest to bed. It was easier to put them to bed together because they were sharing a room. Does that make sense?
Right, like, yeah. You're not one didn't need to be back and forth and all that.
Like read stories in the chair in the other room, you know.
Right.
And actually we had years of reading to them together, which was a fun stage of books because they were same ages. I think they're a little closer maybe than Janet's kids. So they were 5 and almost 3, you know, 5 and 3.
Yeah.
And we found a lot of books. We were able to find books that they enjoyed together, and we kind of started a ritual of reading to them together that might not have, we might still have kind of tried to do the thing, okay, you go put this kid to bed or you do this. And so it forced that issue. And I think that actually it streamlined bedtime, honestly, because we had a new baby.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was one good thing. Back to a couple other logistics. I agree with toys. Our toys were definitely in this loft area in that house because our bedrooms were very small. So they had bunk beds and very few toys in that room. But I remember really feeling challenged with clothes. I wanted the 5-year-old to be able to kind of get dressed on her own for the most part. I felt like they had a lot of clothes. And my kids don't have a ton of clothes, but I did feel like in this small room, that was one of the logistically more difficult part. I'd been used to having like one dresser per kid per room up until that point.
Yeah.
So we got creative with some like bins and baskets for socks and underwear. And it wasn't the classic, like, here's your dresser, your top drawer is shirts, your next drawer is pants.
Yeah.
But I had to kind of get creative. And also with closet, because I mean, it was a bedroom with a normal closet with sliding doors and hanging, a lot of hanging space. But with 3 and 5-year-olds, you don't hang a lot of their clothes other than a few party dresses, you know, for the girl. So I think that's what we did. I remember we put a short little mini dresser inside the closet, and that was the one for like socks and underwear because it fit under the hanging bar. And anyway, so there's all those kinds of, those are just some more like logistical thoughts. I remember clothing being kind of a challenge.
I want to say for us, when our kids were smaller and sharing rooms, that was when we were really heavily into the everyone's living out of a laundry basket phase, which in our house lasted, it lasted a while, like several years. And whoever the smallest kid was at the time, I would usually just keep their laundry basket in my room because I thought, what's the point of putting it in their room?
Right.
I'm probably going to get them ready in the morning downstairs. And, you know, so it just made more sense for them to just keep it close to me than to have it in their room. So that was, you know, I totally took the ultimate lazy way out, but it worked.
Yeah.
One question I had, and I don't know if Janet made this clear, is she planning on having the baby share a room as well, or is that –
No. So it sounds like it's the older two.
The older two.
For those two to share.
Yeah. Because I think the other thing that might happen after a couple of years, you know, the baby, you know, maybe it'll be easier for the baby to have his or her own space for a while or be in with mom and dad or however their situation is going to work out. And then when the baby is, you know, approaching 2.5, 3, that might be when you move the two youngers together and give the older one their own space.
Yes.
I mean, it really, but you know, I regularly hear, and I've said this on the show before, I regularly hear my boys, all 4 of them, talking about how they want to just move all of their bedrooms, all of their beds into one room.
So cute.
And like use, and then they have all these ideas for the other rooms, like how
they does, it opens up. And I love that Janet said that they technically have enough bedrooms, but this is a conscious choice for her. I know a lot of people ask me about boy-girl room sharing, and I remember being kind of surprised by that because they were so little.
Right.
And obviously there'd become a time where privacy and wanting, you know, same-sex kids to be in the same room and maybe not have a boy-girl sharing, but I just felt like that was a long way away for me.
Yeah,
and I
feel
was
like
surprised
that's not...
at how many people wondered if I thought that was an issue. And I was like, oh, I hadn't even thought about it.
To me, that is not a thing until they get old enough where they have modesty and where it's...
quite a bit later.
Especially given the age differences and stuff. I just feel like, you know, they're not going to be in that same place at the same time. So you have time to figure it out.
Right, exactly. One more little like logistical tip I just remembered, and then maybe we should probably move on.
And then I have one more too.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Is we got these great little ledge shelves from IKEA that fit even, I guess I'm picturing bunk beds as if everyone who shares has bunk beds. But if you do have bunk beds or even just bedside arrangements, the little ledge shelves that can hold a few picture books, they look pretty for decorations, but actually each kid, so there was one up top on the top bunk, a Laker could have some books kind of stacked flat, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. where the books lean against the wall, and then a clip-on reading light for each bunk bed. And that would work whether it's two twins or so that they were each able to turn on and off their own light and that light didn't like flood the whole room. And then also to have a little kind of personal space for a water bottle or books or whatever. And even though they were really little, I think that was helpful and it made it feel like, okay, here's where my, you know, books, here's, and they don't have to get out of bed to go look at a book or whatever. Yeah. So those were good. I can actually link to the lights we have from IKEA. They're fantastic. And they're cool. Like $6.
So my one tip that I have, and this is especially, I think this was more important to us as our kids got older. We've got kids who are super extroverts and we've got a couple who are much more introverted. And one thing that we did do in the room that we didn't end up using as a child's bedroom, because it just got repurposed. We had a couple actually, because there were these rooms that we thought that were going to be kids' rooms that they just never went into. So we ended up kind of repurposing them, and one was a toy room and one was sort of a guest room. But we always made sure we had another room with like a bed or a hangout spot. And so the kids who just needed a break had a place to go. So it's not even – and sometimes they would sleep in there. But it wasn't like their bedroom. They didn't have to stay in there. They could be in with their – I'm thinking of Isaac in particular. When he was like 7, 8, 9 years old, I remember him spending a lot of time in our guest room, just kind of hanging out, reading. Sometimes he'd go in there to sleep if he was just annoyed with everybody.
Right.
It gave him another space without feeling like he wasn't in with his with his brothers. So, you know, I think it's nice to always make sure you have private space for kids who are bed sharers or bedroom sharers, even if they don't actually use it as a bedroom.
Right, right.
And that doesn't have to be a full-on guest room with a bed. It could be like a little nook with a chair or whatever. You know, it just worked out that way for us. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Great idea. Well, Janet, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thank you, Janet.
Let us know how it goes. Yeah, again, my kids were just that age, and I had a third one on the way, so I very much relate. So, okay, moving on. So we have a question from Morgan Branson that we got by email. This came in a while ago. So, Morgan, I hope you're still listening.
Sorry
and thank
about
you
that,
for your
Morgan.
Patience. So she wants to know about, I like how she worded it, the evolution of play dates. And I think she means the evolution in as our kids get older, as in, did you do them when the kids are younger? Do you do them now?
Yeah.
And she's talking about, I won't read her whole email, but she's talking about the kind of play dates, the baby and toddler play dates where you're getting a bunch of moms together, chit-chatting among moms and having a scheduled time to let the kids play. Her concern or her question is that when her babies were little, she loved it for the time to connect with other moms. Her kids are a little bit older. There's nap schedules and the play dates are more chaotic. So it kind of feels stressful to drag the kids to like now it's like, you know, a bunch of thundering toddlers and preschools running around. And it's not quite as it's not fulfilling her to quite the same degree.
Right.
So she's more just curious how that worked for us. And yeah, how that evolved, the evolution of playdate. So I thought that was a great question.
Yeah, it is. And it's so I hate the word playdate. Have we talked about how much I hate the word playdate? I don't know. I do. I just hate it. Anyway,
I mean, the word bothers me.
It's what it means. It's the connotation.
Yeah.
But yes.
Like, because does it, I mean, let's explore that, Megan. Why does it make it seem like it's mommy sitting around like eating bonbons and what?
Something like, about it just sounds really trite to me.
Okay.
I just think it's one of those things like, oh, let's have a play date. When really what we're asking is let's get the kids together to play, which is different than what Morgan's talking about where, you know, it's moms getting together to hang out. Well, I'm sorry. If it's moms getting together to hang out, then that's legitimate too. Moms can get together to hang out.
Right.
And their kids can happen to be along. It doesn't all have to be so kid-focused all the time.
Yeah.
And when it is kid-focused, it doesn't have to be so, like, I don't know, contrived. That's, I don't know. I don't like the word. Sorry.
Okay. No, I hear you.
but I will definitely – I mean, I know that's what everyone – it's nothing against Morgan. I know that's what everyone says. Like, play date is the word everyone uses. So when my two biggest kids were little, I did a lot of that kind of thing, hanging out with other moms – often moms I didn't know super well, but who happened to be like on an email list I was in or, you know, in a group someone had put together. And it was fine. It was at that time I had to weigh like it was a cost benefit thing. Like every time I would be invited to one, I would think, well, I'm maybe not going to have the most amazing time of my life. However, it beats sitting around the house and being alone, you know. So that was and from those play dates, a few like strong friendships did develop, which turned into more of that casual hanging out kind of thing that I was really more – it really just suits my personality more. I have to say by the time it was like Will and Owen I remember for a while I was being invited to one at the local Dairy Queen. We've talked about this. Our Dairy Queen has like an indoor playland with a bunch of weird fruit and ice cream you can climb on. And they had this one there where while the older kids were in kindergarten, all the moms from that kindergarten would bring their preschoolers. It just was one of those classes where like every kindergarten mom also happened to have a preschooler.
Kid. Yeah.
And I also had a baby. Claire was, well, I was pregnant for some of it. Then she was a newborn for some of it. And it was complete and utter chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I didn't like the other moms there. I never really felt like I could connect with them very well because it was so chaotic and they were just kids like beating each other up, but I didn't know the mom well enough to really step in. It just was not fun. And one day I remember, and we had just moved to town. So I felt like that was my in, you know, to get
like you should.
William and Owen some friends. I should. And then one day I remember thinking, this isn't even fun. Oh no.
Yeah.
One time my brother, who was a stay at home dad, I took him and I was like, you're going to this thing with me. So we went and afterwards he's like, that was, what are you doing? Why are you going to that? And I was like, well, I don't know. He said, that was torture. I said, oh my God, he's right. I don't have to go. Like there's no rule that I have to go to this thing. So I just stopped. I just stopped going. And you know what? My kids still had friends and I didn't ever mourn the day that I didn't get to go to that play date, which was really, it was like a group. It was like a big play group or whatever. But I just, that I think might have been the it for me. Now my play dates are more like you want to drop your kid off. And Morgan maybe isn't there yet, but that doesn't mean she has to do something that she doesn't find enjoyable in the meantime.
Right. Well, and I think that's exactly where she is. She's at the point where she's realizing, number one, it's logistically harder, I think, because of their schedule and having kids of different ages and schedules and stuff. And so it's logistically more difficult, but also not as fun or more hassle than it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate a lot. I mean, I've talked on this show before that I kind of got lucky and got a little group of people I met at a mom's group. It started as an organized new mom's group, but we quickly like had our own little posse of about five or six moms and babies. And that worked for a long time. But I relate to what Morgan's saying about them getting a little bit more chaotic and less fun for the moms as the kids get older. Yeah. A couple of strategies we used, number one, move it outside whenever you can. So meet at a park instead of someone's house. I mean, I just used to feel really stressed about picking up my house, even though I knew these were my good friends. I knew the kids were going to trash it. Hosting still felt a little kind of stressful. And we used to kind of rotate who hosted. And as the kids get bigger, they're even the sweet kids that you love of your friends. They're running around wrecking your house. Like they're just big and there's a lot of them. And it did start to feel that way. So moving it, like meeting at a park or an indoor play place as often as possible, I think works. And then also taking the focus again, not so much on the kids, but having a mom's night out. Actually that phrase I like even less than play dates is mom's night out.
It's kind of but
but having the kids going out in the evening one time, if you can arrange childcare or have your spouse home, and get what you really are wanting, which is the connection with other moms without the kids. It's easy when they're babies and they're rolling around crawling on the floor, you can finish a conversation, but it's very different if they're 2 and 4 running around, you know?
Yeah.
So we used to do that a lot more as the kids got older. So move it outside, do it in the evening if that really is the connection. And then just to echo what you said, if it isn't fun, don't do it. Like don't do it for the kids because you think you should or because it's out of some other kind of sense of obligation. The kids will be fine. They will, you know, the way that they socialize and make friends happens in so many different ways.
What I was going to say. They have so many, a child nowadays has so many opportunities. And even, you know, if they're not being quote unquote socialized at a year and a half or 2 years old, I mean, they're being socialized because they're hanging out with you.
Right.
You know, that's their, that's how they're learning about the world. Now, when they're 3 and go to preschool or 4 and go to preschool, that's when they start to branch out. But they don't need like a whole bunch of buddies their own age as toddlers. Right. It's just, I feel like that's something that's gotten blown so far out of proportion today. Like this importance of surrounding a 2-year-old with a bunch of 2-year-olds.
Right.
Well, they don't learn how to be adults by hanging out with 2-year-olds, you know, which are, you know, functional members of society. So
yeah, it sounds so simple, but if you do what feels fun and fulfilling to you, the kids will be fine. And then one last thing for me, at least I think is my last thing on this one is, I am often not an organizer at first. Like I'll sit back and I'll let somebody else say, hey, let's do this with the kids. But every once in a while, when I realize like, wait, this is not working the way I want, it occurs to me like, well, why don't I make it work the way I want? And I might say, hey, let's do a breakfast potluck instead of this after school thing we were planning, and let's meet at the park. And so if you feel like you're kind of in a dynamic that you don't like, ask yourself, would it be more fun? Would I actually like to host something or to organize something? And I've had times where I've organized something with moms and kids, a play date or like a party, where I'm like, oh, I actually like did what I wanted because I took the reins. And I think for me, I'm not a party planner by nature. So it takes me a while to get there. I'm like, why don't I create the social dynamic that I want? Yeah. So if you're not an organizer, you might, kind of challenge yourself to think, is there a way I could do a play date that would be perfect for me and be the organizer? See how that feels.
I have one last thing as well. And this is something that kind of took me until pretty recently to figure out what was going on. I'm extroverted, and I've always been someone, well, prior to having kids, which has been almost my entire adult life, but prior to having kids, I was always someone who had a few close friends, but lots of acquaintances. So mm-hmm. I would see lots of people throughout a typical day, and I would be just kind of immersed in like a lot of different social, social interactions. And what I realized finally, trying to replicate that in my life as a mom of little kids, it just mm-hmm. didn't work. I really had to kind of put aside that idea that I was going to be more of that social butterfly for a while and really focus in on like two or three good friendships, because I was finding, and those were easy for me to manage with little kids. Like those, mm-hmm. I never had a hard time finding a way to get together with like a friend or two friends and their kids. That was always fine. It was when it started to kind of blow up, it was just too much for me. Like I got too disorganized about it. It was like my brain, it was like too much stimulation or feedback or something. Mm-hmm. And I finally just realized now, everyone else gets to benefit from me just realizing this. Now that I'm kind of coming out of that, I can look back and say, oh, that was just my kind of introverted season of life. And I remember questioning myself, am I really an extrovert? Maybe I've been introverted this whole time and I just didn't know it. And I think for me, it was all of the external stuff going on. It was too mm-hmm. much, and I had to just kind of focus. And so for me, it was much better to have two friends that I did stuff with than try to balance eight. That for me. So if you're finding yourself in that, it doesn't mean, you won't ever have those fun larger groups of people you hang out with. It's maybe right now you're kind of triaging. You figure out what are you getting the most benefit out of, and maybe you just go to the one person that you really connect with and try to do something just with them. I mean, that's maybe going to work better for you than trying to keep the big group dynamic going. Yeah. And you can get it back later. And, some of those friendships might fall off, that might just kind of fall off the sidelines. And, that's okay too. That happens. Like friendships go in and out throughout your life, and you can reconnect with people later or not. You might realize that you don't want to.
Right.
That's okay too.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And the kids will be all right, as we always say. The kids
will be all right. Exactly.
Do your thing. Okay. So moving on to a question from Kristen Tanini via email. She asked about how does it work when you're at a different spot than your friends are in having kids? I know you and I both have this experience. She's talked about her husband and I were the first among our friends. They were 27. So was I. No, I was 28, I guess, when I had her. But 27, most of my pregnancy, to have a baby. And they had twins. So they were the first among their friends, and they had twins. So they had automatically two kids. Their girls are now probably about two, and they're considering having a third, which would mean they could have three kids before any of their friends had kids, which probably is like you. You probably had three kids before most of your. Then she said, on the opposite end, I worry if we don't have a third, I'll get left behind by the people who kind of catch up and have, have two or three kids, and then now they've decided to stop at two. That's kind of a different question about whether or not to have a third. Actually, we have a whole episode about that. But let's talk about how this works when the friends you've had through high school and college and adult life are like at a completely different place than you.
Well, I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah.
I'll try to make it brief. Okay, so I was in that exact same position. Like you said, I did have three kids before almost any of my friends started to have kids. I was lucky in that my two best friends from high school had kids relatively young as mm-hmm. compared to a lot of other people. They were both in their kind of mid to late 20s.
Okay.
So Jenna, I think, was 27 maybe, and Missy was 28. I mean, they both had kids they both had kids within a reasonable amount of time of me, but I was 20, so that was still 8 years. I will say there was some loneliness, definitely, mm-hmm. especially in the beginning. I had to find other friends. Like I had mm-hmm. to like really work to find other mm-hmm. people who were about my age who had kids. They're out there. I mean, no matter what age you are, there is somebody out there who, even if it doesn't necessarily mean they have to be exactly your age, but is in your stage of life. Right. When I was 20 and living in a one-bedroom apartment and a student, I didn't really want to hang out with 35-year-old moms who lived in this awesome suburban house and had all the crap together. It just, it was nothing against them. And I did make some friends who were in that very different place and it was fine. But I really wanted to be around some other people who were like myself. So I had to look for that. And that was a combination of internet and where I was going to college and that kind of thing. And then my sister, who had kids and was 10 years older than me, that's when we really became close because she was in a very similar phase of parenting as I was. Now what's interesting, and then I kind of hit that middle place, right? Then right around the time Owen was born was around the same time his cousin Jack was born and my friend Missy's son Henry. So I had like that little trio built in. And then it was almost like I had two sets of kids. One of which I had a girl, like a really close mom connection with these other women with, and one who I kind of had to just wing it. Now the interesting thing is I'm 38. Almost everybody in our little small town by my age has had kids. I can't think of anyone who's gonna who hasn't done it. But all of our friends in Chicago are just getting started.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. And they're like a lot of them are a little younger than me, like 34, 35, you know, that kind of age. But they're just getting started. So now it's kind of funny. We're looking at we're so far beyond that now. And we're looking at our friends who we'd like to go hang out and have a great time in the city. We're like, oh, man, in a couple of years, they're all going to have kids and then no one's going to want to do anything. But, I mean, I don't know. That was like a long ramble. But I feel like no matter what, you might be out of sync. I guess if I had to sum it all up, no matter what, you might be out of sync. And also, I also want to just say, like, I feel like nowadays, and I think the next question that you're going to ask is going to also trigger this for me. And actually, so does the last one. There's a different parenting culture, like where we feel like we have to be in the same place as everybody doing everything at the same time. Like this idea that if you don't have this third baby, you'll be left behind. Or this idea that if you do, then you'll be so far ahead. No one can relate, but you're still the same people, right? And the ages of your, like the kids can deal. Just because the kids aren't the same ages doesn't mean the parents all can't get together. And not everything has to be so focused on certain ages and stages and parenting and like where you are as a mom or dad. And this is not a criticism at all of, I'm sorry, who was it?
Kristen.
No, by no means. Like this is the culture we're in right now. There's a lot of competitiveness almost.
Competitiveness and like with social media and just like everything's become kind of like standard milestones. And that's sort of built into your young adult life because you graduate high school and then a lot of people graduate college. And then so everyone is relatively on the same timeline for a long time. And then obviously with having a family, things broaden in terms of that. But I guess it could be easy to see, feel like there's a timeline that's supposed to happen or whatever. I love what you said about, you know, you're still you. And I think this is going to sound kind of like self-helpy maybe, but I think one way to think about it is that like wherever you are that your friends are not, you have something to offer that friendship that is, like a gift or something that they don't. So if you're the one whose kids are older, you have a lot of experience and wisdom to offer. You may also want to go to bed at 9 o'clock and they want to stay out late. So there's maybe parts that make you feel disconnected to the in syncness that the friendship used to have, but just maybe try to remember that you are also bringing something to that, that is something to offer to the relationship. Now, if you're on the other end, like now what I am loving is being the one that doesn't have babies anymore. And have a lot of friends who are now either getting started or a few years behind me for sure. And I just feel like I have a lot to offer in that I can, I have more flexibility. Like I'll come to you.
You know, it's really important too, you know,
And if you're the one who hasn't had kids yet, you have a lot to bring to that in terms of like, well, everything you're experiencing that is not related to like diapers and sleep, your friends need that, you know, they need to know what's cool to do around town and what's happening in the news. So I think if you can, again, maybe this sounds a little like deep thoughts from Sarah, but if you can remember that the friendship is going to change and it's going to go through times where you're more united and more in sync, but that no matter what, if these are friends that are lifers, and I think we are, and we're talking a lot about friends who you really do want to have with you along the whole journey, you're not, it's not lacking. You're just bringing a different perspective to that relationship at this point in time.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And also, everything is temporary.
Yeah.
The friend of yours who's not a mom yet, who has a baby and then kind of goes into hibernation mode, as we all do for some period of time, that's not going to last forever. So, you know, you might feel it for a bit, and maybe you'll have to look elsewhere. Or like you said, Sarah, I mean, I have friends who now, you know, we've gotten used to hanging out with them and going out and doing things with them. Right. At the same time, there's been plenty of times that they've just come and hung out at our house with our kids all running around, and they don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't care that there's five kids running around the house and we're all just sitting around the counter talking or whatever. So I anticipate when they have kids, bring your kids here. If it's not a good weekend to go out, if you don't have a sitter, if that's not you know, plausible for whatever reason, come here and we'll still have a good time and we'll still be friends. It doesn't necessarily, in fact, sometimes I think having the ages off a little bit like that can really be great because it's a little less chaotic. If someone brought a baby or toddler here, that's one baby or toddler. That's not the same as having three running around and there's older kids to help out. And all that kind of thing. I also like kind of being the example of, like you were saying, you know, what you bring. I really like being the example of someone, our younger, singler friends, or at least not yet having kids friends, see as people who had kids and still do stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, like, they'll say, well, you guys still do stuff. It's almost like we're an inspiration. Like, you know,
well, yeah, I enjoy that. You're showing, like, the full spectrum of how this arc goes. Right. This week I had like a quickie getaway and I was with two high school friends, one of whom and I had our first babies 9 days apart. We were living in different states, but we discovered we were pregnant and, you know, spent our whole pregnancy calling each other and had our first. And we were definitely the first of everyone we knew. And then the other friend didn't have her first baby for more than 5 years after that. So there was like a 5-year gap where I'm sure as a threesome, we were not talking all the time. You know, my one friend Sarah and I had a lot more to talk about for 5 years than we did with Erica.
Yeah.
But we were together this week and the threesome didn't suffer for that. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, no, totally.
It all comes back. She's got two little kids now. Sarah and I were able to leave our kids at home, come snuggle her babies. You know, it's like it all like comes back around. It's great.
So I guess what I would say to Kristen is, you know, do you do what works for you and where you are in your life. And you know, where your family's life is, and not necessarily try to make it fit around what other people are doing. Because there's really no way to do that anyway.
And just radically trust that those great friendships will be there. They're going to change, but they will be there. And they'll still be fun. They'll just be different.
And at some point, everyone will be on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And that's when we'll all be retiring, you know, like Golden Girls or whatever.
Right.
Together. So this is just, it's a long blip, but it is a blip.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh man. Okay. Well, I think we have time for one more. We've stayed on track. Good job, us. So this is from Kelsey, and Kelsey sent this via Facebook message. You guys can find us on Facebook. Search for the Mom Hour on Facebook and you should find us. We are still at facebook.com/happiesthome. Which I think can throw you off, but you should be able to find us. And Kelsey sent this in via Facebook. So she has her first baby's almost one, and she said they've spent the last year going to first birthday parties that, I'm going to paraphrase, are just totally not her thing. Like big affairs where the one-year-old doesn't care and is just like staring at everyone, wondering what's happening. And there's a lot of presents and a lot of hoopla. And she's looking ahead to this first baby's first birthday and not wanting to do that, but kind of feeling a little bit of peer pressure and specifically feeling like she doesn't want to make people feel like she's poo-pooing their big parties if she doesn't do that. And I can relate to that a little bit. Anytime you say, we're not doing the big party thing, especially in new motherhood, it's easy for people to hear, well, I had this giant party, so you must be judging me. I mean, that's there, whether we admit it or not. There's always a little bit of that there. So she doesn't want anybody to feel bad, like, we're not doing a big party. Thanks for inviting us to yours, but we're not doing that. And not having that come across as curmudgeonly or judgmental. And so I guess her question for us is, how did we handle birthday parties when the kids were little? How does that kind of change? And how do you stick to what you want without, how do you go against the grain comfortably, I guess?
Sarah, before we launch into our advice portion, can I just have a little moment to rant?
Oh, obviously.
Okay, thank you.
Rant alert, rant warning.
It's probably going to be a gentle rant as I do. Okay. But so John and I, as I just said in the last question answer session, have several friends who don't have kids yet and who are either married or partnered. Like they're in their 30s and they're, you know, their lives are settled and stable and all that kind of stuff, but they aren't having kids just yet.
Right.
And I cannot tell you how many times we've tried to set something up with these friends of ours, and it's not us. We're not the ones that are too busy. They're too busy because they're going to some baby's first freaking birthday party every weekend. And finally, I went to my friend Lisa, and I said, Lisa, I have to ask you, why are you going to all these babies' birthday parties? Like, I don't want to be that person. I just feel like who could possibly know this many babies
right.
that well?
Especially if you're in a friend circle. It's not like it's your niece or your,
And what I kind of realized taking a longer step back and a broader view, I guess, is that the baby's first birthday party is just now one of many sort of required parties and celebrations that happen through the entire phase. So, you know, we know people, we don't actually know anyone right now who's engaged, but we know people who are engaged. Right. And you don't just do one shower anymore. Right. You don't just do one bachelorette party. Right. It's like you're giving up, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 weekends to celebrate this upcoming wedding. Right. So it's kind of like an extension of that.
Yeah.
So I think for me, because I'm not really a millennial, I'm sort of on the cusp of Gen X. I don't know. I'm somewhere in a weird spot in between. I think I'm technically a millennial, but I have much more.
Think I am like as on the cusp as you get. I'm right at the beginning of 1980, very beginning of 1980. I think.
Depends on what's calendar you look
at. Anyway, we're not millennials because we have kids up to age 18. That does not.
And that's the thing. I think for me, like the people I hang out with tend to be millennials or more millennial
behavior
culturally. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of someone who's on the cusp age wise, but I do not identify so I get really grumpy about it sometimes. So that's just that I'm just giving you kind of where I'm coming from as a warning.
Okay.
Because my advice sounds super simple to me, and it's just like, don't do it. And then, you know, you don't have to make anyone feel bad about it because there's a lot of things that they'll do that you won't do.
Right.
And I honestly think people will thank you for it.
Yes.
Maybe not out loud.
Agreed.
But nobody really wants to spend every weekend at a one-year-old's birthday party. I'm sorry.
Right.
And it just – people have other things going on. And it's, again, if it's a niece or your best friend or like, you know, obviously there's reasons why certain parties play in. But if it's just someone who you got on their invite list just because you did, you know, maybe because they went to your wedding or maybe you went to their wedding or maybe you were best friends in college or whatever reason, you're on the list now.
Right.
And I think at some point you have to start making some hard choices, and maybe they're not even that hard, but about which events you go to and why.
Right. Right.
And then that kind of also can help you decide what you're going to do for your own kids, which I always think should be exactly what you want. And the people who are closest to you will get it. And the people who aren't that close to you might just be relieved that they don't have to go to another party.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I a curmudgeon here?
Yeah, you're a justifiable curmudgeon. And I agree that this is completely a cultural shift in the last, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
But I will say first on a broad note, like in general, I think, Kelsey, when you start practicing making decisions for your family based on what you feel in your gut is right, and just start practicing, just do it. If it's about a birthday party, do it. If it's about where you sleep or where your baby sleeps, just do it. All those little things that you practice, because it doesn't go away. You keep, you will keep being presented with opportunities to go against the grain. And I'm not even like a counterculture person at all. I'm very like mainstream in so many ways, but let me tell you, it feels good. And you feel really good about it when you can, especially if you're aligned with your spouse and you can make decisions and you're looking at each other and you'll be like, yeah, we're not doing that. And everyone else on our street is, and it's just not for us. So I'm just like giving you kind of like a virtual fist bump to like, start practicing that skill now, because it's a great skill to have. And those opportunities will go away. They will always be presenting themselves to you. With birthday parties, the other thing I want to say is I think we can give ourselves permission to not jump into one camp and stay there. I kind of like felt for a while like I was the person who did really low key, like, let's meet at a park and hand out cupcakes to our little playgroup friends. That's what we did a lot. And I kind of was like, I'm not even calling this as a party. Let's just, you know, meet at the park and I'll buy grocery store cupcakes. And I had a little bit of like a chip on my shoulder about like, I wasn't the mom who was going to do themed birthday parties. But I think that that's not really necessary or fair to yourself. I think you and I have talked about this a lot on the show, Megan, that you go in and out of like where you are in your bandwidth for those types of things. And some years you may want to be the mom who throws a big party. So I guess I'm just saying, give yourself permission to like make it a year by year and a birthday by birthday decision. I've had years where I did more come to the house and play in the backyard parties, and they were bigger with a lot of kids. And sometimes there was even a theme. Like one year I did a garden theme and we made the little dirt cake with the gummy worms and like a fake flower in little cups. And it was so cute. And I was like, nailing it, you know, like, yeah. Themed birthday party, which yeah. I wouldn't put myself in that camp in general. But like, I think sometimes we feel like we like identify as one type or another, and then you have to stick to it no matter what.
And not every decision we make has to be some statement about every decision we're going to make forever.
Exactly.
Right?
It's so. And if you're not kid about only the has one-year-old one, thing, yeah. But maybe in a couple years that will seem really fun, you know.
And so, if your kid only ever has one blowout birthday party, that's great too. Like they don't need. Yeah. It's not like you have to follow it up with another one, or you're getting yourself in, you know. Right. You're like obligating yourself going forward. It's just do what works for you right now.
Do what works for you right now, completely. And remember too that a kid, what we think of as a party, because we see a lot of images on Pinterest and social media, what we define as a party is very different from what children, yeah. including like I would say older children up to a certain age, define as a party. So you can call it a party and it may be like in your driveway handing out popsicles and singing yes. happy birthday. Yep, so don't, if your kid, this is more, Kelsey's has a 1-year-old, but I'm talking about when you get to like 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds, if they say, I want a birthday party with my friends, instead of being like, oh crap, I have to invite the whole class and rent out the bowling alley, you can be like, great, here's how it's going to work, you know? So yeah. just remember that your kids do not have the preconceived notion of parties that we do, having seen like TV shows about yep. those $50,000 parties. So you can be a great mom and say yes to a birthday party and it can look very, very simple. So I think that's another thing to remember.
Yeah, those are really good points. And I want to say something about the peer pressure, uh-huh. especially for a 1-year-old. I mean, it's not like it's going to go away.
Right.
Sorry to say. Right. But I think especially for a 1-year-old, it's really easy for you to, it would be very easy for you to come up with an out that mm-hmm. doesn't even beg the question, why didn't you have a party? I mean, it yeah. could be we're gonna celebrate her first birthday party at grandma and grandpa's. We're yeah. going to go do this. This year, most people are not even going to realize your kid turned one. And it's right. not like anyone's going to be like, oh, so I saw, you know, on Facebook that right. your kid was eating a cupcake right. and what, why wasn't there a party? You know, I don't really think that necessarily is as big of a thing as we blow it up to be. And right. I'm not trying to diminish it at all. I just think right. that most people are busy going about their lives and aren't probably thinking very hard about what you're doing for your kid's first
right.
birthday.
Right.
And there's lots of outs. If you just want to kind of get through this first one without having to think about it too hard, there's lots of ways to just manage that without really having to make a statement about it.
Yep.
The other thing I was going to say is, you know, I think that to your point, Sarah, about not being that mom or being that mom, and whether or not you are consistently year after year the person who throws the big party or doesn't, I think we all need to, and I think given time we all will and do take a step back from this idea that because someone's doing something we all have to do it, and that takes mm-hmm. some of the specialness away. I'm mm-hmm. thinking of a family in our area whose kids have birthdays that fall really close to Halloween,
mm-hmm.
so they have like this huge pumpkin party every year. They invite all of the kids in their kids' grades. So this is a lot, I mean, not just their class, but their grades. So it's wow. a lot of kids, and it's out, you know, they have live in the country and they have a pumpkin patch, and it right. just becomes this big thing. At no point does any other parent say, gosh, so I guess I should be having a harvest party right. next weekend. Right. You know what I mean? It's not a peer pressure thing because it's their thing.
Right.
And no one expects it to be anybody else's thing. I right. love that we can go to their party and right. not have to do our own. It's fantastic.
Right. Right.
So I think that there's, no matter where you fall on that scale of like, you're the one who does it every year, you're the one who never does it, you're the one who sometimes does it, there's a place for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're just confident about it, mm-hmm. I think that we all kind of accept. I think in theory, I'd like to think in practice, we all accept what everybody else is doing and where everyone else is at. And if maybe your group of moms that you're with aren't there yet, I think they'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very roundabout way of getting
there. No, actually, that is so true. And I don't think that had been said explicitly before. But in that first year, it is like hive mind a little bit, especially if you find your tribe. And I found my tribe early too. And I loved my tribe and I trusted them. So it was very easy for us to like, I'm making hand motions right now that you can't see, but like to move around in that like a cartoonish little pack.
Yeah.
And the differences between us were very small and, you know, on the surface, but we really, so that was a great feeling to have, but it's easy for that to feel like everyone's doing the exact same thing. As the kids get older, when you start making choices about school and everything, like parenting and those differences, there's so many more of them and they get so much wider. It's less scary to step outside the flock, yes. I guess. But
and
I
everybody gets a little more confidence and everybody realizes exactly. They're all doing things differently. And so people exactly. just stop paying attention and caring.
But I relate to how that feels when you are in that flock, even if it's a really great supportive flock. It right. just feels weird to do mm-hmm. something different. So be weird, Kelsey.
Be weird.
We're rooting
for
you.
How you feel like.
And happy birthday. First birthdays are so much fun. I almost feel like that's another argument for doing it small and family is because it's a very like reflective, sweet time. And planning a big party potentially could take away from that. Maybe not, but depending on your style.
Yeah, agreed.
So, well, I loved this. This was so much
fun.
Again, just to recap how you can reach out to us with questions like this, we are hello@themomhour.com. That's probably the best way just because I know where those emails are at all time. But Facebook is fine, either posting to our wall or sending us a message. Twitter and Instagram, we're @themomhour. And what I've started doing on Saturdays is kind of posting a call for questions. So there's always, if you scroll through Facebook or Instagram, you can just find the most recent time where I say, hey, everybody, like, hit us with your questions. You can leave them there. So any way you know to find us, we will see those questions. And it may take us a while. And we may lump them in with some other similar ideas to create a full episode. But it's really fun to hear from you guys.
We love it. It's why we're here.
It's why we're here.
It makes my day. Every time we get an email or a comment, it makes my day.
I know. It's awesome.
Please make my day.
Megan needs you.
I need you to make my day for me.
Megan needs you to send her email. So happy March. I think when this airs, it'll be March 1st.
It'll be March 1st.
Go check out the show notes at themomhour.com. Look for episode 41. And thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
See you next week.